Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Long, long in the river of time, you've healed me in too many days.
Hey listeners, it's Gavi here, and I've got some good news for you and some bad news for you. The good news is that Sadie and I have recorded a full recap of Welcome to Plathville seasons 1-4. The bad news is that this ended up being about 3.5 hours of raw audio, and I couldn't get the edit done in time to meet our production deadline. So what we've decided to do is split the episode in half. Today, you'll get our recap of seasons 1-3, and on Wednesday, you'll get our full recap of season 4, including Sadie's live reaction to the events of the season 4 finale. If you just can't wait that long, the full uncut and extended version is currently available for our patrons. Otherwise, I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll join us again on Wednesday. Welcome back to the Leaving Eden podcast. My name is Gavriel Hakohen. My friends call me Gavi. Let's be friends. Call me Gavi. And I am here with my BFF, IFB, cult survivor, Sadie Carpenter. How you doing today, Sadie?
I am just doing fantastic.
I'm feeling great, too. You know what I did this morning?
What'd you do this morning?
This morning, I watched the season 4 finale of Welcome to Plathville.
Oh boy.
Yes.
I did not watch it. But I have not seen the finale. So I'm going to just let you tell me about it, and it's going to be fun.
Well, it's going to be a great time. And I know that this is an episode that our audience is really excited for, because we're not just talking about the end of season 4, but we needed to have finished watching or have season 4 be done and have us like know about what happens at the end of it before we could do this episode, which is the second part of our Welcome to Plathville podcast episode. So last time we did kind of like an intro saying like this is the background info, all their religious information, and today we're going to actually talk about more of the things that go on in the show, and we're going to be covering all 4 seasons of it. That's
yeah,
exciting.
I had no idea. I didn't know anything about this show. When we started looking into the show to do these episodes, I had the Plaths and the Bates completely confused. I had no clue. So we've gone back and made kind of a rundown of what the events of the entire show so far have been, because I get the feeling that we will probably be right back in these chairs when season 5 drops, whenever that
is. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I get why so many of our audience members, especially Dinah Housefire, we love you, Dinah, were just begging us to do these episodes.
Yeah, because this isn't just a show about like the Duggars is just like, let's pretend absolutely nothing is wrong, even though everything is on fire, where Plathville is like, everything is on fire and we need to talk about everything that's going on all the time, even when it's uncomfortable and even when it's an inappropriate time to be having this conversation. That's what they do.
somewhere. Yeah, it's like the opposite of the Duggars' whole everything is fine and wonderful thing.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And it's a lot more entertaining.
It is a lot more entertaining. But we're going to talk about all of that stuff. But before we get into that, just got to say, the Leaving Eden podcast is the podcast about my BFF and co-host Sadie Carpenter's life in and escape from the independent fundamental Baptist cult, which is the cult in which she was raised. We talk about this cult. We talk about other cults. We talk about religion. We talk about fundamentalism. We talk about the real and present threat that cults and cult ideologies pose to society as a whole. And it is our goal to promote freedom of mind, freedom of thought, and freedom of religion. So if you like our show, if you are a fan of our show, couple of things you can do. You can join our Patreon. That is patreon.com/leavingedenpodcast, where you will get access to extended versions of most of our episodes, as well as some bonus content, including what does an actual cult survivor think about The Handmaid's Tale? Very interesting. Highly recommend you read it. It's awesome. Check it out. You can also join our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Eden Exodus. You can join our subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/Eden Exodus. You can check out our merch, which is in our Threadless shop, link in the description. I just remembered one more thing. We're in the middle of our how-to series.
Oh, right. Thank you for remembering.
We just released last week our dating episode. So how to learn how to like go out, date people, try to get into a relationship if you're coming out of fundamentalism. If you are a person who has come out of fundamentalism and you maybe want to there's something that you want to know how to do or figure out how to do, send us your questions in an email. And if we get enough of these questions, we might do a question and answer episode on how to do all of these things. We like doing Q&A episodes, but we also like doing Q&A episodes with like a specific point or a specific theme. And so after we do like our episode about drinking that we have coming next week, and we have an episode coming out about dancing, we have an episode coming out about buying clothes, those are all going to be fun. But after we do all those, we'd love to answer your questions. So send us your questions in an email at leavingedenpod@gmail.com. That's the best way to reach us. Please email it to us, because if you send it to our Instagram or our Facebook or post it in the group, it's harder for us to keep track of that stuff.
Yeah, at this point, we get so many messages from y'all, and we love them. I generally am able to read every message, even if I'm not able to respond to every message. But it's really hard to compile like audience participation episodes from so many different sources.
Anyway, it's time for me to thank the Faith Promise Missions tier patrons and our I Gave It All tier patron, Melissa. Thank you so much, Melissa, for being an I Gave It All tier patron. Wow, you're the greatest. You're up there with, what did I say? Albert Einstein. You're as cool as Albert Einstein. You're also as cool as Betty White.
Yes.
High praise. Dolly Parton, too. You're as cool as all three of those people. But our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons, your names are Alex Todd, Anisha Patel, Brittany, Brooke Tolley, Carrie R., Crystal Patterson, Eleanor Donahue, Emery Fairlosser, the OG Emery Fairlosser, Hannah Ross, Hope Norum, Jen Kaharski, Jessica Tambeau, Kay Terwee, Catherine Schneider, Kathleen Moncrief, Kristen Marie, Linda Morgan, Lindsay Goss, Lorena Watson, Michaela Upright, Madeline Cusick, Mary Martin, aka the actress who played Peter Pan on Broadway, Megan Arendt, Mike Smith, Miranda Day, Rachel Bernadowitz, Rebecca Hoyt, Reverend Robert Stutz, Sarah Reese, Shane Horton, Stephanie Johnson, Susie, Tiffany Enderby, Walnut Son of Walnut, and as always, Wes the Cowboy. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to all of our Faith Promise Missions tier patrons, to our wonderful I Gave It All tier patron, and to all of the patrons on Patreon who get our episodes a day early, uncensored, ad-free, and with a lot of extra rabbit trails.
Yeah. Believe me, there's going to be some extra ones today because this we're talking
Gavi,
reality
Gavi,
TV.
Buddy, there are extra rabbit trails on every episode.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Maybe this is why we don't record in the same space, because if we did, we'd put out 5-hour podcast episodes.
Yeah, we'd be the Joe Rogan Experience. No, we wouldn't. We'd be better than that.
So I want to give you all a quick general trigger warning before we get started here. In general, we talk about a lot of potentially triggering topics on this show, and we can't predict what's going to be a trigger for everybody, but some of the things that come up a lot are suicide and mental health, racism, misogyny, PTSD, PTSD symptoms, child abuse, mental, physical, and sexual abuse, and spiritual abuse, including guilt, shame, and fear. In most episodes, we'll mention at least a couple of those topics, but we are not going to give you graphic details unless those details are highly relevant to the story that we're telling in that particular episode. We do our best to give the audience a heads up before we go into detail on any of those topics, and if something else comes up that we think, that might trigger some people, we'll let you know before we say it, so you can always skip 30 seconds or a minute ahead or whatever if you need to. In this particular episode, we're very briefly going to mention the death of a young child. We talked about some details on that in the last episode. We won't go back into them on this episode. There's no reason to. We will go into a lot more depth on this episode about parental abuse and alienation, parents using younger children as weapons against older children. We're going to talk about the whole rebellious children concept. This episode is going to be pretty heavy on the early deconstruction struggles as well.
Cool, cool, cool.
Let's get started. I just want to run through, without getting too deep, I want to run through the story arcs from season 1 through 3 of the show. And I'm sure we'll find rabbit trails here and there where I can maybe explain some of these beliefs to you.
That sounds great. Where do you want to start?
So I want to do this chronologically. So we're going to look at season 1. There was tension in the Plath family from the very first episodes. The series started as a look at our family, our kids are so sheltered thing. That was the hook for the series originally. It wasn't look how religious we are. It was look how sheltered our kids are from the outside world. But even in the first episodes, we start to get the picture that there's a lot of parentification going on here. The children do all the cooking and the cleaning, especially the girl children, of course. And there's early tension about jobs around the house, like whose job is going to be what. I guess they weren't quite as organized with the Duggars and their jurisdictions.
Were they tracking people's periods on a big calendar in the kitchen?
Not that we see on TV that I know of.
That would be horrifying.
That would be the Duggars. Then again, the Duggars managed to mostly keep that off camera as well, so who knows? So even in the first couple episodes, we see Lydia taking on a lot of parentification. The Duggars did this by having the bunny teams and having older girls specifically assigned younger babies to take care of. What we see more with the Plath family is less of buddy system and more just Lydia is managing the whole household by the time she's 15.
I'm thinking back to the episode we did a couple weeks ago when you were talking about how even thinking about complaining is a sin.
Yes.
So because Lydia does complain about this stuff. Like, do the Plaths not have this teaching, or have they just chosen to ignore it?
I would have to speculate to answer that question. My guess is more that complaining in Kim's hearing upsets her, and this family revolves around not upsetting Kim. But they are associated with the Pearls, so they definitely could have the teaching about complaining being a sin. I think it's more Kim-centered than God-centered.
And things making Kim mad and Kim being unable to deal with that is basically the central tension of every conflict in this show.
Yes. There's minor tension between the kids, specifically between Lydia and Mariah in early episodes. And then the major tension, though, is Kim not allowing them to do things. And we very quickly get introduced to this ongoing conflict between Kim and Olivia, the daughter-in-law.
So her son is married. Ethan is married mm-hmm. to Olivia, as we talked about last time. And they're living out from under their parents' roof. So how does Kim have the, because this is like this, we think they're kind of IBLP adjacent. How
well, we got a message from a listener about that, actually.
Really?
Yeah. So a listener wrote in who, hold on one second. Okay, so Hannah wrote in, and Hannah says she grew up in the same area, the same geographical area as the Plaths, and was in church with them. So Hannah says that they were not IBLP. Hannah says that the Plaths were Vision Forum.
Oh, okay.
And I was surprised by that because I thought that Vision Forum, like I said in the last Plath episode that we did, was all about like classical education and being super well educated. And the thing is that Vision Forum philosophically is very much about having a good education, but they don't enforce it at all. Like the IBLP is a more, especially the ATI. If you are in ATI, you've got to promise to live up to certain standards, and there's a family coordinator who comes around and checks that you are living up to certain standards. The Vision Forum does not have that. So you can subscribe to their ideas, but nobody is going to come check on you and making sure that you're doing the things that you say you're doing. Hannah also said that a lot of the Plath's children, quote unquote, school time was spent on practicing music for the family band thing.
Interesting. Okay, but like also if we're talking about, because we didn't think they were straight IFB because they don't dress like they're straight IFB, and they don't have the same sort of headship and patriarchy rules as the Duggars do, and they're in the IBLP. So
right, so it is still extremely misogynist and patriarchal. And Vision Forum, if you remember the episode that we did about them, Vision Forum is extremely patriarchal. It is not as chain of commandy as what people who are IBLP or strict IFB practice.
Okay, that makes sense, because that's what I was wondering about, because I was thinking, you know, Ethan and Olivia, they're living out from under their parents' roof. That would mean that Ethan is no longer under the headship of his father, which would mean that the parents wouldn't have the authority in the same way as they would if he was an unmarried man.
Right. But in the Vision Forum biblical patriarchy thing, your dad has authority over you for your whole life, or until as long as your dad is alive.
Okay.
So Kim is still acting out of line as a mother by exerting that kind of influence over her grown married children's lives. But it's not as far out of line as it would be if Michelle Duggar did it. Because okay. IBLP is all about the hierarchy and the chain of command. Vision Forum is about there's one guy in charge and it's the dad.
So if you want to know more about Vision Forum and you're wondering about that, we have an episode that we came out with called Vision Forum. I think it was the episode called the Jason Forum, due to the horrifying sexual abuses that Doug Phillips committed against the nanny that they had hired for their family.
So there's an overarching theme of the show. I think early on, Kim is still trying to exert a lot of influence over Ethan's life, and Olivia is trying to exert equally as much influence in the opposite direction. And this really shouldn't be a struggle. Like, a person's wife should have more influence over them than their mother, probably. Especially when what the mother is trying to do is like, don't drink soda, don't have a beer, don't do anything. So Olivia pushes Ethan to try new things a lot. She gives him soda for the first time, gives him alcohol for the first time. Later on, we're going to talk about how far she pushes him, which maybe sometimes she pushes him too far. I don't know. But Ethan does show a clear desire to deconstruct. He does really want to get out from under his mom's thumb and be his own person.
My read on this is that Kim is Cersei Lannister, Ethan is King Tommen, and Olivia is Margaery Tyrell.
Cool.
Sadie has not seen Game of Thrones. She knows none of that. She doesn't understand any of that, but it's fine.
So we find out in interviews that Olivia has done and in things that her siblings have posted on social media, that her family was within the IBLP. They were attending No Greater Joy events, which is the Pearls thing. And that's how she met Ethan, was at a Michael and Debbie Pearl family camp. So these people are, they have some fundamentalist street cred for sure. Olivia, according to Olivia, she saw the double standard as they started getting, her family started getting more and more into fundamentalism and getting stricter, and she pushed back on that. I think we talked about this in the previous episode. Her siblings' accounts differ, but also that makes sense because the way that two different siblings perceived their family's exit from a cult being different, that's not surprising to me. Like, I don't know if this, you know, necessarily is a someone's lying situation. I think this is a, you know, you perceived it differently. But Olivia does have experience dealing with this exact situation in her own family.
Yeah. And Olivia, by the time she's getting married to Ethan, we think, I don't know, some new information in the finale came to light, which I don't know if we want to talk about that now or if we want to talk about that later.
I think we got to save it.
Okay. Well, because she's done some deconstruction by the time she's meeting Ethan. So I'm wondering how the Plaths are. I was wondering how the Plaths were allowing their son to get married to her if they see the direction that this train is headed. If it's maybe in a more lenient direction than being a more conservative direction like Kim and Barry would like.
I think one piece of the puzzle is that fundamentalist parents don't get to fully control who their sons marry. It depends on exactly what part of fundamentalism you're in, but fundamentalist parents in general can just strong arm their daughters into choosing a certain man to marry or calling off a wedding if they're engaged to a guy that they don't like. They just don't have that kind of power over the boys. They can tell their son to marry a certain person or not marry a certain person. Theoretically, if that boy is fully bought into fundamentalism, then he would feel that it was his duty to listen to his parents and do what they tell him. But they don't have the cultural power to force a boy to marry or not marry someone. Fundamentalist parents, it's fully acceptable to literally imprison their daughter. I don't think it happens very often, but it does absolutely happen. Once a kid is 18, so fundamentalist parents can actually literally physically imprison children under 18. And this is a real thing that does happen. It's not very common in my opinion, but it is absolutely real happening. Guarantee there is somebody right now who is literally being held captive by their fundamentalist parents. Once a kid has turned 18, they lose that power. Fundamentalist parents lose that power over AMAB children. They retain that power over AFAB children until they get married.
Huh.
So culturally, as far as like within their culture, it is acceptable to physically imprison or psychologically force an AFAB child to do things until that child marries an AMAB person. Because there is that cultural acceptance of ownership of your daughter. So Kim feels like Ethan is doing behaviors that she does not like, but Kim tends to blame it on Olivia. So both Ethan and Olivia are on her shit list, but Olivia is more so than Ethan. Pretty quickly in the first season, Kim starts to restrict Ethan and Olivia's access to Ethan's brothers and sisters who are still living at home.
And the blame it on Olivia, that is so typical of everything I've seen about fundamentalism and fundy-dum, is that, like, because if a man, you know, we see this with abusers, like, if a man makes a bad decision, then, well, it's his wife's fault or something. There must be something wrong in their house that makes this man turn to sin. But if he makes a good decision, it's because he's a great man and he's a godly man and there's nothing, you know, she didn't have anything to do with that.
Right. So we're dealing with that baked in misogyny of fundamentalism on several levels, but also in the real world, parents tend to blame their child's spouse if the child makes a decision that they don't like. So this is like kind of normal out in the real world as well. So I think this blaming Olivia for everything Ethan is doing is coming from multiple sources.
I mean, I get the feeling that so many Fundy parents, like that a lot of them are just like hardcore helicopter parents who figured out that there's a way to like religiously justify constantly meddling and constant, like, you being controlling. So, you know, they just want to be controlling, and they're just going to, they found a religious justification for it. And so that's why they became Fundies.
You're not wrong. I absolutely think that that is a thing. Also, though, if you think back to Heather Heath's book and content that we've done about the IBLP, a lot of IBLP parents in particular get pulled into the IBLP because they had a traumatic childhood and they think that they are protecting their children and giving them something way better than what they had. Cults and cult-like beliefs thrive by tapping into people's real and valid fears and then offering a made-up cult solution.
So, yeah, that's something I'd really like to do an episode on in the future. That would be a great
topic.
You
can definitely add that to our list.
Yeah, if I haven't already, I'm sure I've...
So in Plathville, Kim pretty quickly starts revoking Ethan and Olivia's access to the younger children, who at this point include Micah and Mariah. Micah and Mariah at this point are older teenagers, and they're already starting to show signs of independence. Unlike most Fundy parents, Kim doesn't like straight up forbid them from doing what they want to do. She more psychologically tries to trick them out of doing what they want to do, which is arguably more cruel. Micah wants to be a model. Mariah wants to be a singer. Kim pushes back on them following their dreams, but she doesn't put her foot down and say, you can't do it. She just sets them up for failure. Mariah is also starting to dress in a more revealing way, and Kim doesn't seem to be holding on too tightly to forcing her into Kim's dress standards, which is interesting.
Well, last week we talked about that because Kim doesn't really totally follow the...
Kim doesn't follow dress her standards. Own dress standards.
No.
So there's more wiggle room for Mariah to begin with than like I ever had.
This is what the IFB would be pointing at. They would be saying, well, if you slip up, then your kids will slip up twice as much.
Right. True. So, but Mariah is definitely pushing the limits and going past the limits of what her mom would approve of clothing wise. It is interesting to me that Kim is allowing that, because I feel like the IFB mothers that I knew would have just been burning the short shorts in a backyard bonfire. you laugh, but there are IFB parents really love to burn their children's possessions.
Ugh. Really?
Oh yeah.
Like, did you ever have anything burned? Did your parents
not
ever burn?
Not against my will. No, I burned things of my own because I got convicted about them.
The Wizard of Oz lunchbox and the...
I don't think I burned that. I think I just threw it out. It's probably a good thing I didn't burn it because it was old and probably made of toxic material. But Kim seems to be doing this thing, and maybe you've seen someone do this, where she will act like she's supportive, but it's in a very backhanded way. So an example of this, and an example of Kim's extreme control, is that she allows Mariah to apply for colleges. And she even shocks Mariah by taking her to do a campus tour at a college that she's interested in.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, Yeah, that sounds nice on the surface. But parents don't allow their children, who are soon to be adults, to apply for colleges. Did you have to ask your parents if you could apply for college?
No, it was just expected that I would be going to college, and if I didn't, then I would be a failure.
Right. It shouldn't be a question if your child, who is almost an adult, can do what they are going to do. And it shouldn't be a surprise that a parent would support their child by taking them on a campus tour. Like, this is not... This there's something wrong here.
It's like passing an extremely low bar.
Right.
Yeah.
But the backhanded part is that Mariah hasn't been given a decent education, as we talked about 2 weeks ago. So even though Kim is allowing her to apply for college, we can surmise that Kim knows that Mariah is never going to get accepted into college.
Oh, there it is. That's so insidious. And she was applying to like an actual university, not like one of these Bible colleges.
She was checking out Stetson University. It is a real college in Central Florida, real as opposed to like unaccredited Bible college.
No, I've looked them up. They're a private university and they're Southern Baptist affiliated, which like it's totally fine because, you know, I'm sure that there are Southern Baptist kids, you know, they get kids applying to that school who are like homeschooled all the time. I'm sure it's a regular occurrence that they look at somebody who has very mediocre homeschooling education and they're like, okay, well, we can accept this kid, but maybe we have to get them up to speed a little bit before, you know.
I'm really not that optimistic. I showed up at Pensacola Christian College with did not have the skills that I needed to keep up with something even resembling real college coursework. And it was really difficult. There weren't programs or anything much to help me. I just kind of had to figure it out. And Pensacola Christian has a huge homeschool population.
And like, I'm sure that the Plaths are not going to like, no daughter of theirs is going to go to a state school or like a community college or so. Like, that wouldn't have been a viable option, which is a bummer because like community college is like a much more accessible way for somebody maybe with her mediocre homeschooling education to catch up on a lot of topics that she would have missed out on. That's frustrating.
It is frustrating because these kids were so isolated and so poorly educated that I worry that they would never be able to catch up. And that's not an insult to their intelligence because the grown Plath children have different talents and are legitimately good at different things. But as far as formal education or book smarts, I feel like they're too old and it's gone on too long for them to truly catch up.
I think that it's never too late to learn. Granted, like Mariah did not know what the Declaration of Independence was. Like she had like basic parts of like history that we think everybody knows that. She didn't know that. So she would really be starting at the very, very, very beginning, which is going to be rough.
I agree that it's never too late to learn. I think there is a window of time where it's convenient for people to get into academics, like pure academics, like higher level math, historical literature, that balancing equations and chemistry and that, like that kind of book knowledge. And if you miss that window, it's not that your brain couldn't handle it. It's that most people who are over around 18 or 19, they have to work. They have family obligations. They don't have time. There is a window of time where you can sit and study things. And if you miss that window, either at the end of your high school time or the end of your college time, most people don't have time to sit down and study academic topics that don't pertain to their daily lives.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a hobby out of it. But
most people just, in my experience, most people just won't. And that's not, I mean, I don't blame them. I don't blame them. Working full-time or parenting full-time or anything else that people do is difficult. And Netflix exists. And I don't sit around and study academic topics very often either.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because pure academics isn't really applicable to the real world anyway. It's not like it's something that you're going to use professionally probably anyway.
Yeah, so. Unless it is your profession. After Mariah's college visit, Micah and Mariah are not banned from seeing Ethan and Olivia. All the other children from Isaac on down are banned from seeing Ethan and Olivia. So even after Ethan and Olivia were married and Hosanna had gotten married and moved away, the kids were still actively doing music together, which I think is amazing and wonderful. But now that Ethan and Olivia are getting a little too far away from Kim and Barry's preferences, they won't let Isaac participate in music with his older siblings. And at this point in the storyline, Isaac is like late teens. So Isaac is maybe 15. because Isaac is, no, he's not quite that old, because Isaac is 5 years younger than Micah.
Okay, and Micah's 21 now.
Yeah, so Micah's like 17, 18 in this season, so Isaac is like 12 or 13. This is going to be one of the main conflicts of this series, and I want to point out that cutting off older siblings' access to younger siblings if they step out of line is a huge fundy tactic. We've had listeners in our Facebook group and listeners email me and message me on socials who are currently going through something exactly like this.
It's horrific.
It is awful. It is awful. This is one of the most obvious ways and one of the most painful ways that fundamentalism rips families apart. This is mentioned in detail in the S.M. Davis, like, buy my DVDs but not my CDs to fix your child series. This is just a well-known fundy tactic, and it's heartbreaking.
It's really, really atrocious.
So that's the basics of season one. I think we want to move on to season two.
Yeah. Okay, so let's do it.
By season two of Plathville, Ethan and Olivia's marriage is starting to suffer, or maybe we're seeing cracks that were already there. Anyway, Ethan has a good heart, but he also has the emotional capacity of a five-year-old. A juicy tidbit, we learned a little bit about Plath sex ed, which is apparently zero. Ethan...
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. God. Oh, God. I remember this part.
Ethan decides to talk about it on live or on national TV.
I think I like memory bleached myself after watching this clip. It was.
So Ethan tells the camera again. I do not know why. Ethan tells the camera that he masturbated for the first time at around age 13. And then he was terrified because he did not understand what had happened to his body. Like, he thought that he had broken something.
Something, that's not supposed to happen.
Well, no, he just, like, he did not, like, he did not, I'm trying to keep this PG. I don't know why. No, he did not understand, like, the physical reactions that his body did. Because he had kind of never been told about any of this. He did not know what a period was until he got married. After living in a house with mostly girls and women his entire life, he had overheard his mom and sisters talking about bleeding, and he thought they were all just getting injured for several days per month, and they needed really large band-aids to put on these injuries.
Like, what, injured doing farm work?
I don't know.
This is atrocious. Imagine getting married to a man who does not know what a period is, and you literally have to teach your literal husband what a period is. Holy shit.
I don't know who I feel worse for, Ethan or Olivia.
Oh.
I still don't know... all the details about what curriculum Kim used to homeschool, although Hannah told us that they used Saxon math and McGuffey readers for reading and grammar. I don't know what biology curriculum they used, if any, but I can make some pretty good assumptions about the biology lessons being non-existent. And this dynamic of Ethan knowing nothing and Olivia having to teach him everything applies to a lot of situations in this show. I think it's fair to criticize Olivia for pushing him too fast sometimes, but I also imagine that this dynamic got real old real quick for her, and it's hard to blame her for being impatient.
So did Olivia know exactly how little Ethan understood when they got married?
My guess is that maybe she did, but she has done a lot of deconstruction since then, and it's not as acceptable to her now as it was when they got married.
God, this clip was, it was so brutal. It was like...
And like he is so emotionally unregulated. Like, I really like him. I know a lot of people hate Ethan. I don't. He is just so childlike and emotionally unregulated that he has no clue that this is not a story that he should be telling on television.
I appreciate his honesty. Like, I appreciate him being like fully straightforward saying all of these things, because when you see him on camera and Ethan says something, he's not going to like bullshit. Ethan's not the kind of guy that's going to like bullshit or he's going to like beat around the bush about something. He's just going to say whatever it is he's thinking and whatever it is he wants to do, because he doesn't understand that some things are and aren't socially acceptable.
But I don't think that's honesty. I think it's honesty if you know the repercussions of what you're saying and you say it anyway. I don't think he's being honest. I think he's being naive.
I guess.
Like, I think honesty is a choice. And I don't think he has the information or the emotional capacity to make that choice.
So on top of teaching her husband sex ed, Olivia has also got to teach her man to manage his own emotions.
Right. Because as a funding man, even if he's trying to learn how to manage his own emotions, he has never had to do that for himself before. So he's got a lot to learn, and she is just miles ahead of him in deconstruction. And it's really starting to look like a mismatch, even though, again, unpopular Plath opinion, I think there's real love there. I think that she is just getting real tired of his complete naivety.
Did they talk about wanting to, between them, did they talk about wanting to deconstruct before they got married?
The before they got married is before the show started, so we don't really have footage of them talking before they got married. So I don't think we really know.
Yeah, because like I've heard of this happening where two people will, or we hear this from listeners all the time, is that two people will realize that getting married to each other, and they both like want to get out of fundamentalism. If they get married to each other, then that is their ticket out. And then, you know, that desire can kind of bind them together and keep them together, even if other aspects of the relationship may be a mismatch.
That's what I see in Ethan and Olivia's relationship, especially because they're both so young. You know, me as somebody who's a fully 5.5 years older than them.
Than them now, but not them when they got married.
That's true. It's true. They were both 20 when they got married. So I can't tell you for sure if they got married to be each other's ticket out, or if they might outgrow each other or kind of deconstruct in different directions, but I definitely think it's possible.
It's also a bit of like, who is somebody that my parents will allow me to marry? And then we both get out together, but it can't be somebody who is too out, because otherwise that wouldn't fly under the radar.
Yeah, it's almost kind of the 1950s construct of, well, I'm a gay man and you're a lesbian woman and we're going to marry each other to put up a social perception that's acceptable. And then behind closed doors, we'll each kind of do our own thing.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a thing that happened. Probably still does happen in certain areas of the country. I do think that Ethan and Olivia have real love. I don't feel 100% confident that they will stay married. So Ethan and Olivia in season 2 take a trip to California, where Ethan is appalled at the, quote, smell of drugs that apparently blankets the entire state of California from the moment you cross the border.
Narc.
Foreshadowing.
No, like the, yeah, we're going to talk about the season 4 finale when they go to Jamaica.
Foreshadowing.
Oh, man.
So Lydia has a guy that she is interested in. Apparently, she has had a crush on him for years. She prays about it for several weeks in her prayer closet, and God informs her that he is not the one. We'll get more to sold out fundy Lydia's story arc in the next season. But as every season, Lydia spends more time in the prayer closet. Poor girl is spiraling. Meanwhile, Mariah has been kicked out of the family home while still underage. Yeah. She's 17, I believe. And she just got kicked out. Kim just kicked her out of the house. She went to live with Ethan and Olivia for a little while, and then later, Mariah and Micah got a house together. Kim thought she was a bad influence on the younger kids and just kicked her own daughter out. That's it's appalling. Fucked. Yeah. That's... For some reason, Mariah is still allowed to see her younger siblings, but she can't live in the house. It's a very odd double standard, because Mariah is bad enough to kick out, but good enough to come visit. But Ethan and Olivia aren't even allowed to see the younger siblings, even though Mariah's behavior is objectively a lot more wild.
This is so atrocious. Like, Kim didn't even They didn't do any job, like any job whatsoever, of preparing their child for life in the real world. And then they're like, well, now you're out on your own. That's
like, yeah, it is. Yeah. It is a, they thought it was a good idea to completely shelter their children from the real world and then just let them loose in the real world as if that was going to work.
Zero support.
And I remember, like, in some ways, I was that kid. I had very limited access. I had some access to TV, movies, the internet, people who were not my siblings or church members. So I had it a little bit better than the Plath kids did, but I was very unprepared in terms of life skills. I had some basic, here's how to balance a checkbook and here's what a bank account looks like, life education, which the Plath kids probably did not. But I, physically navigating the real world was terrifying to me. Like, learning how to ride a city bus was really scary. So I identify with this in some ways. This is one factor that does make me think that Kim is specifically targeting Olivia, because Olivia is the reason that Ethan and Olivia both are prevented from seeing Ethan's younger siblings, and that same treatment is not applied to Mariah.
So more foreshadowing for the season four finale when we get all of the deets about this. But I want to jump back to something real quick. How common is it for Fundy kids to get completely kicked out of the house?
In regular Fundy world, it's pretty uncommon, because usually if you've got a child who you believe is that big of a problem, you have two options. You either use something like the SM Davis method to completely lock down control of your child until they turn 18, or option number two, you ship them off to something like Agape boarding school or Hepzibah house, a reform school conversion therapy kind of place. I've had like friends of friends that had both of those options happen to them. I've known people that were completely locked down in every aspect of their life, controlled until they were 18 because they were misbehaving in their parents' opinion. I've known people that were shipped off to IFB reform schools. I've never even heard of anyone being kicked out of the house, just get out as a minor.
Wow. I mean, yeah, I guess
this is pretty, I mean, I'm sure it happens, but this is, I perceive it to be a lot more unusual.
At least they didn't send Mariah to like one of those boarding schools or one of those reform schools, because those are just so horribly abusive and like.
That would have been awful. Mariah is a gift to the world, and it breaks my heart to think about her getting sent someplace like that.
That would be horrible. I mean, and like, I guess her moving in with Ethan and Olivia, that's not the worst thing in the world for her.
Yeah, I'm sure this was emotionally awful for Mariah.
And for Ethan and Olivia, that's got to be rough that suddenly you've got to.
Yeah, you're a young married couple, and now your 17-year-old sister is just living with you. I don't want to discount how emotionally difficult this surely was for Mariah, but I think it probably worked in her favor in the long run, considering how bad and traumatic her other options were. Mariah, season two, Mariah has a boyfriend, and she has her first kiss on screen. Poor Mariah.
Fun. God, no. That's...
Poor Mariah. It's just kind of a loose cannon. She's acting exactly like you would expect a 17-year-old with basically no parents to act.
She is like out too. She's like outside of, she's got like bubblegum pink hair.
There's definitely more to Mariah's story. Mariah does consistently have really cool hair. We'll get to a little bit more of her story down the road.
Yeah. Like once people, especially like teenagers, because teenagers, like, they're going to be rebellious in nature, like, to begin with, just because that's what they want to do. But once they see what a facade the whole thing, there is nothing that you can do to put that genie back in the bottle, unless you're willing to just like use the most horribly draconian methods to do that. Mm-hmm. They're going to end up where they're going to end up, and you just have to like let it happen.
Right. Which is why fundamentalism spends so much time trying to make sure that teenagers don't see what a facade the whole thing is. So at the close of season two, Ethan and Olivia, who have been banned from the main house, visit the farm to tell Kim and Barry that they are moving. Actually, they're just moving across town, but they won't be living across the street anymore. And it's a big symbolic gesture to be physically, even just 10 miles physically removed from the family farm. Since Ethan and Olivia have both gone no contact with Kim and Barry for most of this season, they want to say goodbye to the younger siblings, and they want to give the kids a sense of closure, kind of not knowing when they will be allowed back in those kids' lives, if ever, which is pretty sad.
Yeah.
They've set up this method for how they are going to try to go say goodbye to the kids. And I don't know how produced this was. I don't know if this is just like the very dysfunctional way that this family works, or if the producers set this up to create dysfunction. I lean toward it. This is just the weirdo way that this family interacts with each other. But how they've got it set up is the family farm has a really long driveway. Ethan has parked the car at the end of this long driveway, and he's left Olivia in the car and went up to talk to the parents alone. Ethan asks his parents if the younger kids can walk down the driveway with him to the car to say goodbye to Olivia. And the parents, so this was kind of the setup where Kim and Olivia wouldn't have to come face to face, but the kids could say goodbye to their sister-in-law. Kim and Barry waffle back and forth on whether, well, should we let him do it? Should we not let him do it? Should we let him do it? Barry and Ethan almost get into a physical fight.
Yeah.
There is chest puffing and arm swinging, and oh, it is a thing. Finally, Kim and Barry decide no, they will not let the kids go say goodbye to Olivia. So this is another, I think, a good example of Kim's behavior being really bad. Olivia stayed in the car so that she would not come face to face with Kim and Barry, but it would still give the younger kids an opportunity to see her. And that is, I think, is a pretty good like physical boundary. But Kim just starts marching down the driveway. And what she's saying as she's marching down the driveway is, I'm going down there. This is my property. You can't tell me not to walk down my own driveway.
Yeah.
It's really classic boundary smashing. It's also really making this about her. And it is, there's just so much to unpack in the three things that Kim says in that scene.
Yeah, it's so bad.
It is really bad. And Kim is really bullheaded in this scene.
Yeah, and there's like a classic theme that you see a lot in this show where Olivia will try to put up something. Well, she'll try to put up a boundary or something. And for some reason, that will get violated. And then people get mad at her. And then she is either made to look like the bad guy, or she like gets mad about it. And it then this whole conflict between her and whatever the boundary was, it becomes the center of the plot instead of whatever else was going on that was just the thing that they were trying to do.
Right. It's a cycle. It's a cyclical kind of thing. Like Olivia tries to set a reasonable boundary. Her reasonable boundary gets completely smashed. She gets mad about it because she's like 22.
Yeah.
And does not have, through no fault of her own, really, doesn't have the emotional maturity to handle this level of narcissistic boundary smashing. And Olivia gets mad. And then sometimes Olivia acts in ways that are objectively not good.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to criticize. Sometimes Olivia gets her boundary smashed and doesn't react to that very well. I don't think it's an insult to Olivia to say, oh, you acted badly when your boundary was smashed, because this is not a one person is at fault scenario. This is Olivia tried, and then Olivia got her boundary smashed, and then Olivia couldn't try anymore and lost it. In a perfect world, Olivia would maybe handle having her boundaries crossed repeatedly a little bit better, but in a perfect world, her boundaries wouldn't get crossed repeatedly. So this is not something that I'm able to see as a one person at fault scenario.
So I've watched a lot of episodes of this show. Do the younger kids know why they're not allowed to see their brother anymore? Do they, like,
if they do, we don't see it on camera. I'd have to guess that Kim has probably fed them some BS reason about why they're not allowed to see him, or maybe they're too afraid to ask why they're not allowed to see him.
And this is about the season four finale that I just watched. And I'm only bringing this up now because it's not like a major point in the thing. But like there's an event that they're wondering whether that like all the family is going to be there. And they're wondering whether Olivia and her brother Nathan are going to show up. And one of the younger kids, I can't remember which one it was. One of the younger kids is in the car on the way there. And she's like, I don't think Olivia is going to show up. Like they're speculating. I'm just like, huh, you're like 10. It was like one of the younger daughters. I can't remember which one. And I'm just like, but you know that Olivia doesn't get to show up to stuff or that Olivia has these sorts of conflicts. And it was said in very much a sort of way that I'm like, oh, okay. You're blaming her and you have maybe some animosity towards her. You've been told some things about her.
Right. Because Kim has no boundaries with her children and treats them all like her therapist. So to close out this drama at the end of season two, Barry says to Ethan, quote, I hope you enjoy living in bondage. Referring to Olivia as bondage.
I watched this clip. This was when this was like right after Ethan and Barry almost like went to fisticuffs. But like this is 100% pure, uncut, unadulterated projecting to me. Like how can you say that to your son when you are married to somebody who will happily break up her own family and disown her own children rather than relinquish control over them?
That I'm really glad you said that. I think that's a really good take.
I was watching this part and I was thinking, like, while I was watching it, I was saying, this cannot be real. This is nuts. This is just,
I just think that my perception is that the family had very little conflict while all of the children were still children at home, and they have never had conflict with each other before. So now everything is spilling out in a very messy way. That's just my perception. The season ends with Kim throwing a weird tea party for her remaining kids at home.
Yeah.
So now, after all of that drama, we get just a little taste of the, like, this is totally fine kind of Duggar attitude.
So, a couple things. One, what did you think of the dress that she was wearing at the tea party?
I mean, it was ugly. Also, it was not traditionally considered modest.
That's my take as well, that I saw that. I'm just like, wait, you're a fundy. I thought you guys were all about rules and all about standards and never changing and never. But then again, this is the class. This isn't Kim, like the.
Kim is fundy enough to kick out her underage children. But when she wants to go boobs out for a tea party with her kids, she can suddenly do that.
Yeah. The wild thing about they do all of this like off camera. Like there's a bunch of that happens like off camera. Like, you know, the I hope you enjoy living in bondage, that line was said off camera. But the scene where they're playing, like where they're all saying, like, you could tell they're just monsters.
Honestly, I think the most interesting thing about this so far has been how unrelated the fundiness is to the monsterness. I feel like if Kim had just been a crunchy mom with no religion, she would not have been one bit less toxic or less controlling. The religion is a helpful tool to enhance her control, but her control issues are completely separate.
Yeah. No, I could totally see her being like the crunchy anti-vax mom, you know, who's like the room parent, but not to help out in the classroom, you know? She's just there to be the room parent so that she can continually police her own children and keep them from playing with or hanging out with the kids that she doesn't think are good enough for them. You see that stuff in public schools. I remembered that stuff happening in public schools when I was growing up, and it was the worst. But like, after Kim is done being a monster and like driving out her son. She's just like insistent on violating her daughter-in-law's boundaries until Ethan stands up to her, and or she's like turning around and crying into her other children's shoulders because like, and acting like she's not the one that caused all of this. Like in that clip when they were walking down the driveway, she's right. just like, I'm going to walk down this driveway. This is my property. And Ethan is like, the hell you are. And like basically threatens to fight his dad over it. And then Kim turns around and is like, why is everything bad happening to me? And is like crying into the shoulder of her younger daughters. And I'm just like, Barry's just standing there like, huh, well, this is fun. Just yeah, like
Barry has so completely given up on everything. Life is just happening around him at this point.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely hear more on that later.
Look, like, I mean, you could tell, though, that if he hadn't backed down, Ethan absolutely would have put hands on him. He
absolutely
like he you could like you could look at he for sure.
But it like, was of course, happen. He of course Barry backed down, and it's not because he didn't want to hit his own son. It's because he doesn't really have the energy at this point to hit anybody.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good place. Let's go ahead and take up the offering, and then when we come back, we will move on to season 3.
That sounds great.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, Sadie here. If this is your first time listening to the Leaving Eden podcast, make sure you go back and check out episode 57. It's a primer episode for new listeners. That episode tells my personal story and gives you all the terms and information that you'll need to know going forward. Also, check out our cult true crime series, The First Family of Fundamentalism, so that you can get the whole cult story. If you like our show, you can support us by joining our Patreon, where we have extended and uncensored episodes, as well as other bonus content available. You can also join in the discussion in our Facebook group. That group is called Eden Exodus. Tell a friend, tell a family member, tell your worst enemy. The Leaving Eden podcast is a fully independent podcast, and we really appreciate your support. Now, back to the show.
All right, we are back from our break. We are talking about Welcome to Plathville, the TLC show about the Plath family. We've talked about season 1. And season 2. Sadie, what happens in season 3?
Not so much happens in season 3.
Did they film it during the pandemic? Is that what happened?
I don't know. This is rural Georgia. I don't think the pandemic happened much after like March or April of 2020 in rural Georgia. Before we get into season 3, I forgot to do this at the top of the show, but I have to thank Fundy Friday's YouTube channel. So thank you so much, Jen and James, for your excellent Plathville coverage. So in season 3, Lydia has met a new guy and she's now texting with a new guy. Kim is fine with Lydia having a boyfriend for some reason, but is not fine with how often she is texting him. Apparently, Lydia and Mystery Man are texting 100 texts a day, which Kim found out about because she forces her 18-year-old to use her cell phone and won't get her own cell phone. Lydia's not 18. Lydia's like 17 at this point. So that she can be all up in her text messages.
Wow.
I don't know about you. I send 100 texts a day to any number of people. I am convinced that there are 100 texts a day most days in my mom group chat that Dinah put me in. I probably text you 100 times a day as well.
Yeah.
Like, don't you think we probably send each other 100 texts a day?
That's because
like,
we talk
plenty of days. Literally between that and like sending pictures of Chuck to my mom and my mother-in-law, there have got to be days where I send like 400, 500 texts. This is normal for people of our age. And Kim feels like she needs to control the number of texts that her teenager can send. Lydia is behaving in an extremely fundy way. Because how Lydia deals with her mother's need to control how many texts she may send a day to her man friend, Lydia decides that how she's going to deal with that is to pray for self-control to text this guy less.
Man.
Poor Lydia. I feel like Lydia is me as an 18-year-old fundy. I really feel for her.
If you're some dude who is texting Lydia from Plathville, do you watch the show or not? That's the question. Hypothetical situation, you meet a girl, you're like 17, 18, 19 or whatever. You're texting her and you're like, and she's like, I'm on a reality TV show. Do you watch the show or do you not watch the show?
I have no idea. We don't know anything about this guy that she was texting, but Lydia seems like the type to me to not mention that she's on a show.
Either that or like he found out about it and he just refused to sign a release.
That
so they could,
also
yeah.
could be it. Yep.
Also
very plausible.
Yeah.
So Micah's story is starting to really pick up in season 3. Micah has signed a modeling contract and he is playing the field as a 19-year-old model. He's still living with Mariah, which I guess is good because literally who else is going to feed Mariah and put a roof over her head? She has no education and no life skills. You know, honestly, I think Mariah is becoming my favorite person.
I like Mariah.
I really do. Like, I don't, she's, and I hope she's not listening to this. She's kind of cringy sometimes, but in like a normal 18, 19 year old person way. Mariah is very immature, but in the normal expected way that an 18 year old has every right to be. And I really have a soft spot for her. Mariah Plath is like Ginger Duggar to me. So, Ethan and Olivia, Mariah is still dating this guy, Max. Ethan and Olivia don't trust him because Kim and Barry like him and allow him to see the family.
Okay, Max sucks, though.
This is true.
Real.
Max does suck.
As soon as this guy came on screen, I did not like his vibes, okay? He has big Scorpio energy. This guy looks like he wants to sell me NFTs. I f***ing do not trust Max. I do not like Max. He can off.
I agree with you. I don't like Max, and I'm going to tell you why I really hate him in a few minutes. However, the internet is very divided on whether we hate Olivia or love Olivia.
Yes, this is true.
And I generally fall on team love Olivia. There are a few times that I have to switch teams for a minute and come back. This is one place where I see the point about her being a bit controlling or immature or just not living up to what I like to see from Olivia. Olivia has every right to hate Kim and Barry. They've been awful to her. I think distrusting someone because Kim has shown him more favor is over the line. I think there are good reasons not to like Max. I think this is over the line. So then again, Olivia's like 21, 22 in this season, and it makes sense that it's hard for her to see someone else get the favor with Kim that she would like to have. So I'm not saying it's not understandable. I just think it's over the line in an understandable way.
I am with you on being team mostly love Olivia, because I think there are many times when she has engaged in conduct that I view as highly questionable. Highly questionable.
Oh yeah.
The gravesite thing from later we will
take that apart into every possible piece.
Yeah, that was a highly questionable Olivia moment. I'm not going to deny that. That being said, I think that she is the only thing that is close to a functioning adult on this entire TV show. She, as far as not trusting somebody that Kim and Barry like. So my take is that that can't be the main reason. But if somebody comes into your life and they're like, oh, Kim and Barry like this guy, then that is immediately going to put up a bit of a red flag for me. That doesn't mean that this guy's automatically bad, but that means maybe I take a second look at him. And if you take a first look at Max, he is not a cool dude, and he sucks, and he's terrible, and he doesn't treat Mariah very well at all, and he's got to go to begin with. I do not one bit fault Olivia for not liking Max. Max sucks. This is not.
I agree that Max sucks. I think Olivia is, how do I explain this? I think that she is missing some finer points of how the Plath family functions. I think Olivia has clearly like therapized herself and probably been to real therapy. I don't know if that's ever shown on the show. And Olivia has done a lot of therapy adjacent work on and for and with her husband as well. I don't think Olivia has applied those concepts to the Plath family. I don't think she's really studied or looked into how dysfunctional families tend to work, because I think if she had, she would realize that Kim and Barry are not showing favor to Max because they like her. They like him more than they like Olivia. I think if she studied into this a little bit more, she would realize that this is all kind of part of Kim's manipulation and that it is not a reflection on Max, positive or negative. It's just another thing that Kim is doing to get to people and to play her cards.
Counterpoint, I think that Kim and Barry are the type of people who would like Max specifically because he displayed controlling tendencies.
I don't know if I agree with it, but I appreciate your take.
Because like in a later episode, when they're at the when in the pole dancing in season four and the pole dancing part in season four, Mariah says that she was that the relationship that she was already that she was in previously, which I assume was with Max, is who she was talking about, is that she was talking about how he was controlling. And that kind of set off an alarm bell for me. I was just like, oh, OK, well, maybe that's why Kim and Barry liked him, was because they saw aspects of him and aspects of how he acted with her that were similar to the ways that they acted with.
So maybe they kind of thought that he would keep her in line.
Right.
Hmm.
I don't know. As soon as Max came on stream, I sometimes you just get a feeling for certain people. You're just like, oh, this guy. And I got that with Max. So maybe maybe that's just prejudice because I saw him and I didn't like him. And I thought that he looked like a keto NFT bro. But that's just me.
I'll give you more on my take on Max later.
OK, I also think maybe this is also cultural with Olivia, regards to Olivia. Different people have different ideas about how much power they're okay with seeing women have over or like in their household. And I've been watching a lot of this show. Granted, there've been plenty of instances where Olivia has done things that are extremely like questionable and not great, but I haven't seen her be as particularly awful as Kim is on a regular basis. And sometimes if you're dealing with psychos, you have to be awful to keep them away from you.
Yeah, that's true, but it's not going to make you look good on reality TV.
Yeah.
I think my take on season three Olivia is that she just lacks finesse. She's not doing the wrong things most of the time, but she overreacts or underreacts because she doesn't quite have the life experience to get it right. It's like, okay, like when you first start learning to cook and you never get the salt quite right, it's either a little bit too salty or not quite salty enough, and you need more experience to get it just right.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
I think that's like season three Olivia.
Yeah. And also like sometimes out of the gate, you have to let somebody know, I don't like you, I don't trust you, I don't respect you, I don't want anything to do with you, don't expect anything from me because you won't get it. Sometimes there's some people that you just have to say that to and they have to learn to live with it and just let them know, I'm not going to pretend to like you or pretend to be nice with you just because there's other people around. I'm just not going to engage with you at all. You know what I'm saying? Like sometimes you just have to do that.
I don't do that, but sometimes I think it would be good if I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am not assertive enough to start out with somebody that way. If I had been, I would not have struggled so much when I had terrible bosses in the past. Like, if I had just gone with my gut and done that from the beginning, I probably would have saved myself a lot of heartache.
Yeah. Also, though, if you're a man, that's more acceptable to do than if you're a woman. If you're a woman and you do that, bingo. They're all, she's a bitch. Yep. She's the worst. Mm-hmm. I hate her. She's so cunning. She's so conniving.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Because women are expected to perform false positivity and this like niceness, especially in America. That's a huge, or with Western culture, I guess, in general, it's a huge thing.
Especially if you're out here on the West Coast where we are.
Yep.
Or, you know, a lot of people are kind of fake nice out here.
And there's just like, there's no good option, because it's, you can either perform this societally accepted fake nice, or you can get labeled a bitch and lose opportunities because of it.
Yeah. I don't know. From what I've seen, there's definitely a few. When I look at Olivia's relationship with Mariah, there's a couple of issues there. There's push and pull. Neither of them have the level of maturity to have the most healthy friendship in the world, even though they are very close and they do clearly love each other. I've seen people go so far as to armchair diagnose Olivia as being a narcissist. And I think I think that's a bit over the line for me. So, and there's a couple of reasons why that, at least if you don't mind, I'd like to elaborate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
First of all, it's reality TV, so they can make whatever they want to happen seem like it's happening. You know what I'm saying? So they can go in and they can look at a bunch of footage and they can try to piece together whatever story they want from it. So maybe they decide that Kim is not really in the picture with Ethan. Kim and Ethan are not having any contact. We have to have there be conflict, or otherwise, you know, there is no show. So they have to make Olivia into the villain somehow. Olivia is doing this, Olivia is doing that, Olivia is making XYZ thing all about her. And then everybody will watch it and be like, oh, Olivia, she's a raging bitch. She made this thing all about her and she spoiled Mariah's special day or something like it. And because, like, they got to deliver the content. So that's one thing. And that's just the nature of reality TV. And if we're watching this and pretending that it's like going to be completely factual on its face, that's
right. I mean, because
kind of what you get.
Reality TV needs a villain. And Kim and Olivia are both very strong personalities, regardless of which one you believe is the villain in this particular moment. And unfortunately, that kind of leaves Mariah as a pawn in a couple situations, but especially the one I think you were just referencing.
Yeah, and it's also rough because it's acting like Mariah doesn't have any agency in her decisions that she makes. And I guess as the show goes on, she starts to exercise more agency, but...
Well, yeah, Mariah early in the show probably had no idea how to have agency. So she got pushed into this role of being the pawn in somebody else's game because Mariah is still learning that she can be the person playing the game.
Yeah, she was made into a bit of a Sansa. The other thing is Olivia's 24 currently. Right now she is 24 years old. Mariah is 19, right? Or she's like 19 or 20.
I think Mariah just turned 20 in real time in 2022.
Yeah. They're both raised in fundamentalism, with the Bible being the only acceptable way to process your emotions and feelings. As far as emotional maturity goes, they are legal adults, but they're kids. I think I believe probably from the things that she says, it looks to me like Olivia's probably had some therapy, some like actual therapy, but they're kids and it can lead people often to form codependent relationships with each other, blow up at each other over stuff that really shouldn't be as big a deal. It happens in friendships, and sometimes like you work through it and you get more healthy, and sometimes maybe you have to stop being friends for a bit and then you come back and say, okay, well, this is what happened, maybe we got to avoid our old patterns, and sometimes you just stop being friends. Like, it happens. This is something that happens with people as they grow up, and it's rough, but it isn't the end of the world, and you live and you learn. I don't think she's perfect, Olivia speaking, but I really do think that people go way too hard after her on a lot of the snark pages. That's just my take on this.
I generally agree with that take. I just don't want the fact that people go too hard on her to exempt her from all criticism, because Olivia is old enough for fair criticism.
That's true. She has processed and she's deconstructed enough that, you know, she is, I think, much more responsible for the things that she does and says than many other characters on this show.
Right. It's just, you know, when I hold Olivia's feet to the fire, like I'm certainly going to do when we talk about the end of season four, like, holy shit. When I hold her feet to the fire, I am hoping, like, my intention is to want her to continue to get better.
Yeah.
When I hold Kim's feet to the fire, it's to talk about how much I dislike her because I don't have a lot of faith in her getting better. Like, I would love if she did, but I don't have a lot of faith or hope for that. When I criticize Olivia strongly, it's more with the intention of you can do better. And I really think you can keep growing and not get stuck in this particular place where you are.
Yeah, I mean, she's up quite a bit, but, you know, she's not like a lost cause or anything. And people just really just, I mean, they say things about Olivia that they would be saying about Kim. And I really think the
best thing for Olivia is not being on reality TV.
I mean, how would you feel if you were on reality TV during your deconstruction? Like during
I don't want to be on reality TV now.
I wouldn't either.
I do not need that.
Actually, I would be great on reality TV.
You would be excellent, but
I applied to be on The Bachelorette. That's true. Yeah. Why am I saying I don't want to be on reality TV? I do want to be on reality TV. ABC cast me on The Bachelorette.
But that's like, if you're on The Bachelorette, you're filming for like 10 weeks, 12 weeks. And then it's done. That's very different from filming indefinitely.
Unless they invite me for Bachelor in Paradise.
That's true. You still get a break, though. So so there are, in season three, Olivia and Ethan do a trial separation, but end up getting back together. Kind of a half-assed separation, if you ask me. There are more shenanigans around new experiences, like Olivia getting a belly button piercing. It kind of seems like whenever the show doesn't have enough content, they just make somebody go do something new and shocking and unfundy, which is how we get the pole dancing thing later on in season four. But it's entertaining, so I can't really blame them. It is kind of fun.
And that's kind of what you want to see if you're looking at deconstruction content. You want to see people going through, like, that's why we're doing these how-to episodes, right? We're trying to shepherd people through these decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of fun. Ethan has some very, like, Ethan's reaction to the belly button piercing is right back to, like, 5-year-old emotional maturity, Ethan.
It's so wholesome, though.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you're kind of still a kid. Oh, buddy.
Yeah.
I really hope you get into your 20s sometime soon.
Once again, the Game of Thrones comp with Tommen and Marjorie.
So here's in season three, we finally got to the part where the reason why I hate Max. So Max slut shames Mariah for her clothing, which
Boo.
Is supremely Mariah does dress in a very revealing manner after getting loose of Kim, but it's not out of line for what any other 18 or 19 year old girl wears. And it's clearly a reaction to how she was raised, and it's not hurting anyone. So shut up, Max.
I've said this before. I will say it again many times. Max is complete trash. He is the worst. I feel like he's going to try to get me to join his pyramid scheme, or he's going to try to talk to me about real estate investing. And he's going, Max strikes me as the kind of guy who listens to like Jordan Peterson while he sleeps. He's no, like in the, cause like I said, in the pole dancing, part in season four, like this is after they're broken up, spoiler alert, they break up. How sad, nobody said ever. No, Mariah talks about how the relationship that she got out of was and controlling, and Max is the guy who's being and controlling. So Max, he sucks, and he should not be saying such mean things to his girlfriend about how she's dressed. That's really just quite poor form for him, and he sucks, and he did not come out of this looking good.
So this is a trigger warning for slut shaming and clothing shaming for all the ex-fundies. Max said something to the effect of, why advertise something that's not for sale, which was triggering as hell for me and probably all the other ex-fundies out there.
Since I what I went to school for was marketing adjacent, I can confidently say that there are plenty of reasons why you would want to advertise something that is not for sale. In fact, oftentimes it's better to advertise something that is not for sale than to advertise something that is for sale. And in fact, when you have something that is for sale, it is something that people want. Often you don't even have to advertise it. And if you do advertise, you are devaluing your brand by essentially begging people to come and buy it.
Interesting.
You know, Ferrari. They make cars, very fast cars.
Yeah, I'm aware,
They're you know.
I've heard of them.
Have you ever seen an ad for Ferrari anywhere?
Okay, now that you mention it, no.
No, you've never seen a commercial. No, Ferrari does not advertise. They make race cars. They go racing with their cars, and then they use that as the marketing to sell their road cars. Like, that's what they do. You never see a commercial for them. On the other hand, you have a product like Rolex, which is another luxury product, which is often difficult to get your hands on if you want to buy one, because so many, the demand is so high. So they advertise the shit out of it so that they can basically say, hey, look at this product. You can't have it. And so that drives up the value of the brand, and that drives up the value for the customers who are buying it, because you buy it and then it holds its value because more people can't have it, and you advertise it so people keep wanting it, but they can't have it.
So that is very interesting. And
it's counterintuitive.
Well, that's a very interesting thing to learn, but I would like to point out that unlike a car or a watch, a person's body is not a commodity.
Hard agree.
And that Mariah's body cannot be sold because that is horribly unethical and illegal, and that even sex workers do not sell their body. They sell their time just the same as anybody else who works for Amazon or a car manufacturer or in sales or whatever. And that Mariah is not a sex worker. She is just a person who is wholly and completely irrevocably in possession of her own body, which is not a thing. It is the shell for a person called Mariah, who is a really nice person. So like, I'm not trying to come down on you, because like, learning about advertising and having that little rabbit trail is actually very interesting. I was just thinking about what Max said while you were saying the thing about advertising, and yeah. Mariah's body is not a thing to be advertised. It is the holding container for her soul and cannot be for sale because it irrevocably belongs to Mariah.
Yeah. Max sucks. We hate him.
Max,
that's the
sucks.
Point of this. He's wrong about everything.
So to sum it up before we go into the season 3 finale, Max sucks. Sex workers sell their time, not their bodies. Mariah belongs to Mariah. Max sucks. Did we get it?
Yeah, okay. And Max doesn't understand marketing or advertising, which is weird considering that he's a dude who strikes me as the kind of guy who reads Dave Ramsey nonstop and quotes rich dad, poor dad at people and thinks he's a f-ing genius about business. And like, that's the vibe I get from this dude, is that like...
This is fair.
Like, this dude, he feels like he's just like basic keto NFT bro that took like one marketing class in college before he dropped out because he was like a keg stand backyard bro. This guy, he sucks. He's shitty, and he treats the woman who he claims to care about and is dating at the time quite poorly, and says demeaning things to her and bad things to her that negatively affect her self-esteem, which are really mean and you shouldn't do, and Max sucks and we hate him.
Yep. This I don't know. This is just what happens when you see women and AFAB people as collections of body parts and not people.
Yeah. Okay. Max should go back and purge his brain of everything he's ever heard on the Joe Rogan Experience. Or like, Max is the kind of guy who I feel like you would see as like a TikTok finance influencer. I get the ads for them as like Instagram reels, because I see everything on Instagram like 3 weeks after it was already on TikTok. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, that's what I see on Instagram reels, because they figure you're a man and you're interested in cars and watches. Therefore, you must be interested in being a finance douche. And you always see some dude being like, I bought my first house at 22 and now I'm a millionaire. Like that's like the type of dude that Max is to me. He just seems like douchebag that's like, I have a 30-step system to get you where I am financially, and with your financial independence and multiple streams of off.
Okay,
Max.
The big season end arc for season 3 is that Mariah has a gig booked to sing at like a cafe not too far from the community where they live, and Kim says that she wants to come to Mariah's concert. Small problem, Olivia is Mariah's keyboard player, and Olivia doesn't want to see Kim. So Olivia says that she will play keyboard for Mariah's concert if Kim and Barry don't show up. Which, okay, fine, she set a boundary. I'm not sure if I think this boundary is reasonable. I would think a more reasonable boundary would be she'll play keyboard if she doesn't have to speak to Kim and Barry. It seems like a lot to ask them not to be in the same room, but Olivia is allowed to set her boundaries, regardless of what I think of them. Mariah relays to her parents, please don't show up. And Kim shows up anyway.
Of course she does. That's like extremely on brand. I don't get it. If I was Mariah, I don't know if I like, granted, I've never been through anything that she's been through, but also the fact that they like, I'm thinking about like coming from Olivia's perspective, you don't just hate Kim and Barry because of how they've treated you. You hate Kim and Barry because they also, like, Mariah is Olivia's best friend because they also sent their 17-year-old daughter out on her own with zero life experience and just put her out into the world because they thought she was too rebellious.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, and maybe, like, Mariah can forgive her parents for doing that because she's younger, but maybe Olivia has some distance from that and is like, no, that's too fucked up for me to stand.
Yeah, I can see it. I understand why Mariah does not want to be in the same room with these people. I don't feel that Mariah fully grasps that she is still in a family with these people. So I see both sides. I really do. I really do.
Yeah, as much as it is Olivia's opinion, and I think an extremely valid one, that she doesn't want to have to deal with these people at all, it's also like not her call on this one, I think.
Right. This seems like it should be more of Mariah's call. And then I don't know, but I don't know if Mariah can find another keyboard player, although Ethan plays piano, so I would think that she could. Anyway, I feel like this is a classic example of Kim making it all about her, though, when she shows up. Because Mariah and Olivia were of the opinion that this was set in stone, that Kim was not going to show up. It's Mariah's first solo concert. And remember early at the beginning of this episode, I was talking about Kim like being backhandedly supportive.
Yeah.
Or when she took Mariah to the college campus, Kim acts like she is being a saint, like she's being super supportive. This is your first concert. That's a big deal for you. But actually, the whole entire plot line is about whether Kim will get to witness Mariah's first concert. And she boundary smashes and centers herself all the way to causing a huge ruckus at Mariah's first concert. So she made out like it was going to be all about Mariah's performance, but actually it was about Kim.
Here's a question for you.
Yes.
What do you think of Mariah's music?
It's really just not my style. Have you looked it up? Do you have opinions?
Yeah, I looked it up. She's making music under Mariah Jasper.
Yeah, Jasper is her middle name, and it says a lot that she is not using her last name for music.
Yeah, you'd think that you put Plath on something and that's going to get you a lot more buzz. No, we heard Mariah sing, and I put a clip of the Plath family band in the first episode, and that was Mariah singing the leads on that one. And so you can tell from listening to that, she's good at singing. She's a good singer. I looked up, I looked up a couple songs, but she's got like two songs out. They're both on streaming services if you want to look them up. One of them is called Missed Myself. I think it's interesting. Do you want me to put a clip in here?
Yeah, can you do a short little clip for our listeners who maybe haven't heard her music?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'll put in like a 15-second clip. I think I can do that without getting like copyright infringement.
I shut myself in my room and try to stay.
So from listening to that, my opinion, I don't think that she is a bad singer. I don't think she's a bad songwriter. I think the weakest part of the song is that the instrumental of the song sounds a bit demo-y. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does.
Like with the, it's like synth drums and e-piano, and the vocals I can tell are like extremely like country inspired and like bluegrass inspired, which is, you know, makes sense because like we heard her singing in the Plath Family Band. We heard her last week. Like the vocals are country inspired. And I think it's just like a stylistic difference between what the vocals are doing and what the instrumental track is doing. I don't know. It's just my opinion. Who is it? Who am I to tell somebody what music they should and shouldn't be making? Because I don't think I'm her target audience really anyway. Yeah.
What do you think about her, like, vocally?
Vocally? I think she's, like, I know that she is good at singing. Like, she's technically good at singing because of what we heard. What I think about the vocals in this song is, in my personal, this is just my personal preference, not anything about, you know, whether she's good or not. I would like to hear her using less. Like, you can tell it's very, like, melodyned, and she uses a lot of auto-tune to flatten out any vibrato that's in her voice. And that's a thing that's really in style right now, and a lot of pop singers, like, every pop singer is doing that. I don't know if I really like that style, but that's what she's doing.
I saw Mariah in a short film that she acted in, and this was discussed heavily on the Fundy Fridays Plath videos, so if you watch those, you'll also get this. I just think her acting talent is maybe better than her vocal talent, and I think maybe her modeling talent is better than her vocal talent.
Interesting. Because I rate her as a singer. I think she's solid. She's got a good voice.
I'm not saying she's awful. I see her kind of the way I see Selena Gomez. She's a good singer. I just think she's a much better actor than she is singer.
Selena Gomez, great singer. No slander on Selena Gomez. I think she's very talented. But second, I'm trying to find the liner notes here to figure out who produced the song. And I think that's like a missing link. I think if she had like a really good producer behind her and had like the mix done really well, then I think the song is decent. I don't know if she self-produced it, if she might have self-produced it, because, you know, I know that, or, you know, she might have had
her recording company sent her equipment to record it at home.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess if this was done during the pandemic, then that would make sense. Because that's the sort of thing that you end up with if you're maybe not as experienced at producing your own music. Because writing and recording your own music is one thing, but producing your own music and also recording your music is something else. And that's kind of a different, and that's a, like, a huge undertaking. I've tried to do it. It's very difficult, which is why if you listen to any of the music that I release, all of the instrumentals are really, I try to keep them as simple as possible because I'm just not a great producer. I think the mix on the song is maybe a little bit off, and I think to make the harmonies like slot in properly and link up properly, they've maybe gone a little overboard with the melodyne, which is really, it's a really easy mistake to make, especially if you're producing yourself, which I assume she is, because if you're comping vocals and editing vocals to try to make them sound perfect, like, it's really easy to go a little overboard on that because you want to sound perfect. Like, every time you listen to yourself speaking or you listen to yourself singing, you're going to hear something that you don't like that other people are just used to hearing, and they think that's just your voice. She came out with another song this year called Weakness. Yeah, I think Weakness is a better song than Missed Myself. I think the vocal production is a bit more obvious, so that it's been melodyne. Anyway, Mariah is trying to do the influencer, you know, TikTok, YouTube, actor thing. I don't see any reason why she couldn't make that work for her. I think she's talented. I think that she's got like she's got as much chance as anybody else to be successful at doing that. Especially because, you know, she's got, she's a little bit, reality TV famous, so she could spin that into something.
Yeah,
I
respect that she is trying to use her fame in a really constructive and positive manner to make something for herself.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with doing that. Nothing wrong with going from being a reality TV star to being a successful musician or a successful actor or like nothing wrong with doing that whatsoever. If you make it work, if you can make money off of it, do it.
Yeah, and if you have the ability to do that thing, especially. Yeah. I really respect that Mariah doesn't just want to be a reality star, because I feel like she could make money on that, but she wants to push into actually following her passions. I think that's pretty cool. I think she's got a lot of room for growth, and I mean that in a very positive way.
Like high ceiling.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of good places she could go with this.
Yeah, she's a talented singer. We know she's a talented singer. We heard her sing. She's great.
It's nice to hear you say that, because some people on the internet think she's really bad. And you definitely know more about singing than they do. So I'm glad to hear you say that.
But people on the internet say everybody's bad if they don't like them. You know what? Like, that's just like...
Well, you know, some of the internet hates Kim. Some of the internet hates Olivia. We're going to get into that. But before all of that happened, we got to go back to Mariah's concert. So Kim crashed the concert. It upset Olivia, and Ethan once again had to stand up to his mom in his wife's defense with very limited tools and very limited emotional capacity to do so. There was a very reality TV, like almost fight in the parking lot. I do love that this show feels more like reality TV than 19 Kids and Counting ever did.
Yeah, this show feels like there's some moments on this where I'm just like, oh, is somebody getting, I guess they don't really do wine, or the fun, Kim and Barry don't do wine, so nobody's going to get a glass of wine thrown on them, like a Real Housewives show. But
yeah, so let's get on to season four, because that's when like
season this four
gets
is
like so
nuts.
Reality TV.
Oh my God, season four!
I have to love it. It is like real reality TV, and I never watched this show because I didn't think that would ever happen, but it totally did.
No, this is cool. This show is nuts. That like season four is so much, like everything happens. Not every episode is a banger, but a lot of episodes are bangers. Hey listeners, this is where our recap of Plathville seasons 1-3 ends. We hope you enjoyed this, and we hope you'll tune in on Wednesday to hear our recap of season 4, including Sadie's live reaction to the events of the season 4 finale. Make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast to make sure you don't miss it. You can follow the podcast on Facebook and Instagram at Leaving Eden Podcast, on Twitter at Leaving Eden Pod, and you can follow Sadie at Sadie Carpenter Music on Instagram, Hell Yeah Sadie on Twitter, and Sadie Carpenter 1 on TikTok. You can follow me at GAVRIELHACOHEN on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I hope that you guys have a great day. Bye bye.
But old rolling river of time healed me in too many days. No regrets, no confusion.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.